This is Sarah Lockhart on The Visible Hand interviewing artist Steve Lambert. Steve, would you like to do a brief introduction of yourself and the work you do?
Sure. My name's Steve Lambert, and I always have a hard time describing the kind of work I do because it's so varied. But it basically centers around the themes of public space and how it's used, advertising, and kind of different possibilities for those two things.
Recently, you received a grant to do a large public art project involving advertising. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, I got a grant from the Creative Work Fund, which is really lucky to get. And I'm collaborating with the San Francisco Print Collective. Together, we formed a sort of a new company called the Anti-Advertising Agency. And the Anti-Advertising Agency kind of works like a regular advertising agency, except it's self-destructive. We're trying to kind of envision new possibilities for advertising in public space, but using that structure of a business. But kind of the way I've described it is inserting a gear to make the whole apparatus run backwards, you know.
Do you have clients like a regular advertising agency? Do people, you know, commission you to make ads for or anti-ads for certain things?
No, our clients are more like we're more interested in serving the public. You know, a regular advertising agency would has private companies that it's working for, and we're instead working for the audience, you know.
So essentially with the public as audience, so you're the one basically determining, you know, the needs of the public in terms of is it that you identify particular spaces that you think call for messages?
Not necessarily. The public in a lot of ways determining what they want. One of the projects that we have is a poster project called Ad Lib, where we have a blank, it's a poster with a drawing of a blank billboard on it, and we invite anyone to draw what they would want to see if they had their own billboard that thousands of people were going to see every day. So they are determining the content of the poster. We've just kind of created this template, and in the same way our projects, we've created the template to work from in a broader sense. So we're commissioning other artists to work with us, and they're determining what the work will be. But a lot of it is very tapped into who the audience is going to be and having them determine the outcome more than the artists coming and saying, this is what I want to say to you, you know. So,
have you received any submissions of Ad Lib billboards?
Yeah, a lot. Some we just put up blank on the street and let people draw in what they want to see. And then a lot of them I just carry around a stack wherever I go and ask people to draw them, you know, like a stack of posters and markers and stuff. And at a party, I'll pull them out and different people will start writing stuff. So I've gotten things, you know, from all different kinds of people. The one that I like the best so far of like the 50 is this guy who was working at a studio that I was visiting. He was like the desk guy and he was really bored. And so I left him a poster and it's like, here, work on this. Never met the guy before. And when I came back, he was reading a magazine when I left. And when I came back, the magazine, he had like cut out all the pictures of these like teen pop sensation girls, you know, like Britney Spears and the Olsen twins and stuff, cut them all out, glued them onto the billboard, and then just wrote, who needs school?
And as the executive of the Anti-Advertising Agency, something like that, where would you think the ideal placement for such a message would be?
Anywhere. You know, the public space is incredibly lacking in any kind of message that is not driven by a product or sales or, you know, even the public service stuff has these other motivations. Like they're trying to better the image of outdoor advertising more than they want to convince people to stop smoking or wear their seatbelts, you know, and those kinds of community or public service messages don't come from the community. It comes from the advertising agency or some kind of bigger council that's nationwide, you know. So you're not seeing even the things that supposedly aren't sales driven aren't community based. So as something like that, you know, it's humorous. It makes a point that, you know, school really probably is important if you think about it, you know. And I couldn't think of a lot of places where I wouldn't want to see that.
Following the logic of advertising, I mean, is this something that, you know, you would put up near, you know, a high school or a college? You know, it's about school. It's, you know, that's the audience,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, at this point, I'll take whatever I can get. It's, you know, anywhere where it would be seen by lots of people would be great, you know.
So for this, are you actually going to be using the funds to actually rent billboard space to put up these messages, or is it just sort of a guerrilla art campaign where you just sort of, you know, put stuff up wherever?
Yeah, the way that we've done it so far is we borrow, as far, you know, as far as the whole project goes, we borrow the things from advertising that for us work, or that work in general, you know. Putting things outdoors so people see it a lot is inexpensive. It's very effective, you know. So we use that. Paying for a billboard doesn't work for us. The billboards that you see, if you were to drive on I-80 out towards Oakland, those billboards are $40,000 to $50,000 a month, each one. And so you can quickly like add up how much. I mean, we don't even have that much money for the whole project, so that part doesn't make sense for us.
Right.
So out of necessity, rather than wanting to be sneaky or something, we're putting them up in any kind of public space that we think is appropriate and isn't, you know, damaging to someone's property, but will be seen. And so we're really selective about where it goes, but we're not getting billboards now.
Okay.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. That
right. So you're not using the traditional spaces where regular advertising is. You're using other public spaces.
We're getting really close. But the bus shelters and all that stuff, I mean, that's part of what makes it prohibitive for regular people is, you know, those things cost a lot of money. And you can't just go and put something up even if you rented the space. You have to pay for them to produce it. You have to pay for them to not only produce it but reproduce it. And, you know, it just puts it out of reach for anyone but the people have a lot of money or companies that have a lot of money. And that's one of the things that I find incredibly unfair, you know. It's public space, but it's not public access. It's not democratic in any way, you know. It's democratic if you have money, but I guess that's democracy American style.
I guess so. It's instead of, you know, one person, one vote, it's $1, one vote. And
yeah.
The more dollars you get, the more
votes.
More
you get.
Votes. Yeah.
Yeah. And those are the things about business that I don't like. And that in the projects that I've done that borrow business structures is like the things that I try to change, and the things that those are the things that like people laugh at, you know, about my projects, but they're meant to be funny.
One of your other projects is the Budget Gallery. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the Budget Gallery is kind of unusual. It's like an art gallery, but it takes place outdoors in spaces. We don't actually have it's not a gallery in that we don't have a space. We don't have a building. We don't pay rent anywhere. That's the budget part. And we just find these spaces that are in public space that should have some other purpose, you know, but maybe there's a construction site there, or maybe the building burned down. And we set it up outside on any kind of vacant wall or fence that could be useful as a gallery wall. Besides the not having a building part, everything else we do like a regular gallery. Like we promote the shows, we try to paint the walls white, we label everything. We have a pretty extensive like website and everything, so that part we use.
Right.
The paying the rent part we leave.
And I imagine the work is also priced for the budget of someone.
Yeah, it's like we encourage garage sale prices, and one of the ways we make sure that the prices stay low is that after the opening, the pieces are totally unguarded. It's left on the street. It could be stolen. It could be sold. It could be vandalized. And I couldn't tell you which one would happen to any piece. So the pieces stay up, and we have a little phone number that they can write down and contact us if some stranger walks by the following day and wants to buy it. But if they just took it, then that's on their conscience, you know. So it works on the honor system. But that also keeps the prices low, because if you price your work at $20 and someone sees it for $20 at the opening and was like, wow, you know, if I don't buy this for $20 now, anything could happen to it.
Right. And presumably, you know, an artist isn't going to contribute a work to a show at the Budget Gallery that would be, you know, worth $200 because presumably it would be stuff that they wouldn't mind
Our motto is masterpieces are not required. And we try to get people, you know, if you're an artist, you produce a lot of work, hopefully. And not all of it is good. It's just the way it is. And so there's work prints, there's, you know, sketches. And those are the kinds of things that I have a really hard time throwing away because I feel like they're worth something or someone might like it. I can't just throw it out. It's really hard just to put it in the trash, you know?
Right, right.
But hanging on a wall and then I, you know, I can be okay with whatever may happen to it after that.
Right, so. Or work that you've done, people have done, say, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, and they feel like they've moved on from there and they're tired of storing
yeah.
it in their
oh, yeah,
studio
yeah.
or their
There's
apartment.
There's tons of people, yeah. We get that stuff too. Old work, you know. Yeah, I put some stuff in the last show that was like I did 10 years ago, and it's just been in a drawer and not doing any good there. So
you're basically sharing it with the public.
Yeah, yeah.
I read somewhere where one of your more recent budget gallery exhibitions took place right near the 49 Geary Building, which
yeah.
is where the highest profile gallery zone in San Francisco. It is where home of, what, Catherine Clark and Gallery and
Hackett
Rena Branston, Hackett Friedman, basically where all the big name, expensive, high profile, famous people show their work and the
yeah.
work actually sells.
Yeah. It's like, you know, on the caliber of the MoMA, but they have price tags.
Right,
yeah.
right. So, I mean, this may be an obvious question, but what motivated you to have it there? Did you do this on a first Thursday when they all have their openings?
Yeah, yeah. The main reason was that's where the art lovers are. And, you know, they can't afford what's inside. Maybe a portion of them can, but most can't. And they just go to look at it because it's there. And so the people are there, and that's where the galleries are. And we had some artists that we wanted, that we thought deserved some recognition. And so we chose, we have what's called a budget gallery showcase, and we take a few artists, and those ones we don't leave. It's like a short-term show where we protect their work and try to give them a little something more. And set that up across the street. Or actually, we set it up right in front of 49 Geary, and it was like 20 minutes, and their security guard came out and told us we couldn't be there. And it's the sidewalk, right? This is like the whole thing with the budget gallery is the sidewalk. It's public space, and that on the sidewalk we can gather, and that's what we do, you know. And we can have stuff hanging on the walls, you know. As long as the owner doesn't complain that there's this art on my walls, which is kind of a crazy complaint. So anyway, the security guard guy comes out and it's like, you can't have this. There's going to be this big opening here tonight, as if we didn't know. And you have to move. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm sorry. I thought the sidewalk was, I didn't know you guys owned the sidewalk. And I didn't mean to say it in like a confrontational way. It was just like, I didn't know that you could tell us to move, you know. And he says, well, you know, I can call the police and they'll just come and haul all your stuff away. And I didn't come there to like challenge the galleries in like a legal way or challenge the law and like what freedom of speech is and what the sidewalk is and freedom to assemble and that kind of thing. And so I said, okay, what can I do? You know, I have all this art here. What do you want me to do? Let him solve my problem, you know. And the security guard guy says, well, you know, you can move down there. And he points like, you know, he's pointing to the left, you know, down the street. And I was like, well, where, you know, what do you mean? And he's like, past that drain pipe, which is like 100 yards away, you know. It's like, and I was like, well, why can't we just move down here? You know, he's like, well, we own this whole building all the way down to the drain pipe. You got to move past the drain pipe. I was like, okay, you know, I'm like, what about this way? Well, we own all the way down to, you know, the building, actually the doors are, you know, 30 feet, but the building is like most of the block.
Right.
And so he's in charge of the building. So I was like, well, okay, you know, it was just too far out of the way. And I was like, well, what if we just go across the street? And he's like, go across the street, it's fine. So that's usually, you know, and that's funny because that's usually how it works. It's like whenever there's very few times that we get complaints, you know, but when I say, you know, instead of being confrontational, when you say like, okay, we need to solve this problem. What are we going to do? You know, there's usually something that's fine. You know,
right.
Being across the street was fine.
It's not. It's not their property. It's they don't care. I guess.
Yeah.
It's a,
and so we moved across the street, and then everyone in the windows of the galleries could see us better.
So in a way, it was a provident thing that you had to move, and that it improved the visibility of your exhibition.
Yeah. And whenever I talk about this, people always ask, like, well, what do you do when the police comes? And that's like imagined to be the biggest problem, but it's never been a problem. It's just imagined to be a bigger problem than it would be. It's hilarious. The police showed up at our last show because there were so many people at the show that they couldn't, someone complained that they couldn't walk down the sidewalk.
Right.
Which is probably true, and that there were people hanging around on the street because there wasn't enough room on the sidewalk. And so I was like, okay, what do I do? And he says, I don't, he just kind of has this like blank look. I'm like, okay, how about I tell everyone on the sidewalk, to move to the side and the people on the street that they have to be on the sidewalk, but we'll leave a path clear. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. I don't even know why somebody complained. He's like, I wouldn't have complained. This is great, And he just came because he had to,
Right.
Was the gist of it.
What problems do you have? Or are there any?
Organizing it. It's like we don't turn anyone away. Because that like galleries are really competitive and it's hard to get a gallery show and it takes a lot of work on behalf of the artists. And we also don't feel like we need to do any curating that way because the nature of the shows, it being like so risky for the artists and it being in the street and that they're never going to see it again, that kind of curates itself. We get a certain kind of work that way.
Right.
And sometimes it means they're kid drawings and sometimes it means it's like people who are doing work that they want put out that way. They want to put in harm's way.
So you actually get, submissions from artists who do get gallery shows and
who are accomplished.
And, maybe it's...
And then first time people that have never shown before and they get so excited because their piece sold for $5, Like they're so amped. So then the problem becomes we get art from all over the world, and each show is like 40 to 50 artists and more pieces, because they all don't send one thing. And we've never really, we limit the size because we have to move it, which is another problem. But we've done like, I don't know how many shows and we've gotten way better at organizing it. And then we put it all online. It's a lot of work. We put it all online because the work disappears. Like the show, none of the art will basically never exist again.
Right.
There's no way to pull it all together or find it after. And so we put everything online as a way to like document it.
Right. As the exhibition itself is also art. It's an art project in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember. Seeing images of one that was in, I believe it was an abandoned Taco Bell at the intersection of Mission and Valencia. And it's one of those buildings that you walk by and you think this would be great for
anything,
something other than a Taco Bell,
When it was open, I was making a movie about it. And because it was like a Taco Bell in the heart, in the middle of the Mission. And it was like, there was this Taqueria Cancun right across the street, and equally cheap food for, probably by weight. And I just could not understand why people would go there with like authentic food as an option.
Right.
So I started to make a movie about it. And then they went out of business. Like I couldn't understand how they were still in business. And then in the course of making the movie, they went out of business. So then I was like, okay, I'm still going to use that site.
Now you're just starting off with the anti-advertising agency. What do you hope will come out of it?
It's very ambitious in one way, and I'm also really realistic in another. Like, I know that it will only have an impact probably in the Bay Area, and hopefully, in the Bay Area. And by that, I mean, like, five counties,
Right.
If it had an impact in all five counties of the Bay Area, that would be awesome. It's not intended to be, like, this nationwide thing. But if that happens, it's great. And it is already, like, it's weird how much it's reverberated out just by having a website.
Right.
Like, I got contacted from this woman at Newsweek last week.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah. But they're in New York, So anyway, so it's very localized, the Bay Area. You know, we don't expect to put advertising agencies out of business or end advertising. You know, that would be pretty unrealistic. It's very realistic in that we just want to raise kind of a public awareness for advertising in spaces that you don't have a choice whether or not to see it.
Right.
It's called out of home in the advertising business. Anything you see outside of your house, or like a magazine would be print, TV, and radio are like the traditional methods. Everything else is basically out of home.
Right.
And so to raise awareness for that stuff, because right now, if you walk down the street, you'll see posters advertising some new show on Channel 7 that's going to be coming out in a few weeks, and some movies and new records and shoes or whatever. But that is, for most people, is just like part of living in the city.
Right, as these messages are part of your built environment.
Yeah, yeah. And if you saw them in Pacific Heights, then it would be weird. But here it's normal, you know? And our goal is to make wherever you see that to be not normal, you know? To be just as alarming as if you saw it in a national park, you know?
Right.
It's all public space.
Right.
Just because you own the building that the ad's on, you know, it's like a visual environment that everyone, you know, I don't have a choice of whether or not I see it when I go outside of my house.
Right. And if you were to, you know, alter it, you could conceivably get in some trouble for destruction of private property.
Yeah. Yeah. It's private. They enjoy all the benefits of it being private property and none of the responsibility of doing something in public, you know?
Right.
Or that serves the public.
Right. And do the people submitting ideas also submit, one of the things they submit is the idea for the site?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, that's maybe, you know, that might be something that we work on together.
Right.
It's not a one-person thing, you know, or it's not a one-interest kind of thing. Like if you're putting up a Pepsi ad, to give you an example by opposite, if you're putting up a Pepsi ad, then there's a small group of people whose interest that serves, as far as, you know, the guys in that department at that company, you know, and then the shareholders or whatever in a way. But our idea is kind of the opposite, where like more people are involved from different groups
right.
in creating the message that is aimed at a much wider group for a bigger purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
And presumably the purpose isn't to sell people things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are the works going to comment on advertising, or is it kind of open? Could it just, you know, is it just
there's
images, or is it, you
there's
know?
Like a two-pronged goal, and that can be accomplished in whatever way, like from images to video to performance, whatever these people who submit these proposals want to do. We're going to do what works best, but the two-pronged goal is to like denormalize advertising, make it seem unusual in public places. And then hopefully simultaneously, but another purpose or goal of the project is to help people or inspire other uses for public space. So that would be, you know, maybe you give an example of, instead of advertising, you know, this is the kind of message we could have, or no, the absence of advertising, you know, what would that look like?
Right.
Or reformed, what would reformed working beneficial advertising form B, and those are the, you know, there's a lot of like big questions like that we as the anti-advertising agency don't know the answers to. But if we can do work that gets other people thinking about that, then that's like one
you've
of
served
the,
your mission. That's the
yeah,
that's the mission
of
the company, right?
Yeah, yeah. It can be a beginning, you
right.
know. We're not arrogant enough to think that we have those kind of answers.
Right.
You know?
But you want to sort of serve as a catalyst
yeah.
to other artists or people in the community
yeah.
to take that on as an issue or,
sure.
or a problem.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of artists, especially in the Bay Area, that are doing work in public space. And not all of them are thinking about what that means, you know, what it means to put a message out to thousands, literally thousands of people that are going to see it day after day. And, you know, a great example that I give is, like, imagine if just 25% of the graffiti artists in just the Bay Area decided that they were going to do work that was like really direct and that had a message. Like they understood the responsibility of putting a message out again and again on everywhere people looked.
Right. That wasn't just writing their name.
Yeah. Beyond writing their name. How incredible would that be? What could they accomplish if even just 25% of them did that?
Right.
So, I mean, and that's just graffiti, you know, there's all different kinds of street art and most street artists, I love it. I love street art, but most of it is not very critical, you know, and by critical, I mean like analytical thinking, you know,
right. Acknowledging itself and its site.
Yeah. And the potential it has and the responsibility that goes with speaking to such a large number of people.
Right.
You know, and that's another like hopefully byproduct of this project is that people that are working in the street who are going to be writing these proposals for this project will then say, well, this is a way that I can work.
Right.
You know, I don't want graffiti artists to stop writing their name, but, if they started to add to that, you know, that would be incredible too.
Yeah. Final words, closing thoughts.
Well, I could tell you how you could find out more information about the different projects.
That would be great.
That, like I said, the anti-advertising agency, we're looking for artists to work with, and we like a company we can pay. We're using some of the money that we've been funded with to pay other artists, so we can offer I think $1,000 stipend and around $1,000, I can't remember exactly, for supplies. For each project. So we're looking for people that are artists or not even artists, you know, people that have ideas that want to work with artists. So they can get info at antiadvertisingagency.com, just one big word, antiadvertisingagency.com. There's also a lot of information on there about what I've been talking about with advertising in public space, like different articles, and you can download posters and put them up in your office or in the bathroom at your office or in your neighborhood. The Budget Gallery, we're going to be doing another show in November in the Mission. And the website for that has all the information you'd need, and it's budgetgallery.org.
That was Steve Lambert on The Visible Hand here on Neighborhood Public Radio, 88.9 FM, located right here in the heart of the Mission at 401 Alabama Street, hosted generously by Southern Exposure. Michael Starve is up next with a special guest, so stay tuned for that. Tomorrow on The Visible Hand, we have interviews with Rick Prelinger of the Prelinger Archives and found footage filmmaker Craig Baldwin, and we're going to be talking about found footage filmmaking, fair use, appropriation, and all of your wonderful copyright issues. Thank you very much.